the beginning, yes, because our adjustments were not as, well, let's say, as good as they are now. They were based on other things other than the energy of the horse. My belief on this is always has been, if adjustments are based upon the horses in the race, this is taken care of. Class of the horse, class of the track. Anytime you put these horses into the computer and they're based on a triangulated adjustment, then it is taken care of the distance, it's taken care of the daily variance, taken care of the track to track, except if it is a fast track coming to a slow track. I go back to the same thing. Why penalize a horse coming into a race coming from a cheaper track if you think he can win? You don't just mentally penalize him and throw him out.
First of all, I've never made adjustments for track class. In other words, I've always made it the difference in the track speeds if one track is faster than the other. But I've never heaped an adjustment on an adjustment for class. And I think that's wrong, because you start tampering with the baseline really artificially. What I will do, though, and I think I described it yesterday, I did make some adjustments for a horse coming from Del Mar, and I made some adjustments for a horse coming from Pimlico to Laurel. But beyond that adjustment, and that's based on the $10,000 pars, and assuming within fairly narrow class parameters, a horse is a $10,000 horse at Long Acres, can compete very nicely at Bay Meadows, at Golden Gate, and even at Santa Anita at that level. So the difference in those track speeds are $10,000 pars. And I will make those adjustments, but then I won't make adjustments, but you don't have to make adjustments beyond that. The reason for that is, for example, a Long Acres, the typical $10,000 horse at Long Acres runs about 111.1 on an average basis, right? Well, at Bay Meadows, they run 109.4. See, that's, you're talking seven lengths now. And you severely penalize that Long Acre horse by not, first of all, taking that seven lengths away and then letting the computer take care of the daily fluctuations. But there's such a difference between those two tracks, you've got to make some adjustment. But it's not for the class of the tracks, it's for the difference in the speed of the tracks. Everybody clear on that?
You'll never ask that question. You'll always get no.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Oh, wait a minute. Hey, we're blowing the whole thing.
We're not doing Q&A yet. Nope.
We're blowing it if we do that.
We're doing Q and structured.
Because yeah. Otherwise, there's nobody hears the question and we go back to where we were. But they would be very happy to answer private questions.
Nope.
This one I'm going to handle, and maybe they will like to comment on. This person is obviously rather new with us. Can you provide a sign-up sheet today so that members in common geographical areas can identify each other and form user groups? N-O. Everything I've worked 17 years to build up gets torn down when this happens. Unless it's under the direction of an authorized teaching member. We will give you a list of authorized teaching members and charter members by geographical use. But folks, this goes back to how the seminar started. If you have to lean on someone who's a total stranger to you and assume that that person knows more than you, and if you feel that you have to get into a user group, I'll tell you what happens. The dumbest, loudest, most negative thinking person will dominate that group, and he will thwart your efforts and make you feel negative. It's happened for 17 straight years, and I know it would happen again if we did this. Now, we will put up a list of members and teaching members and give you those on request. You guys have any comment on that? Because that's a much-asked question.
I do.
First of all, I sympathize with the question, because you are kind of lonely and lost, and you would like to associate and gain something from the association, but invariably, what happens is you feed off of one another's weaknesses. And if there's a strong personality in a group, whether he knows what the hell he or she is talking about, it still dominates the group. And what you wind up getting is, it's like common banks. I've played and seen a common bank, and the play made from two top type players, and all you get is the worst from each. That's what you wind up. You don't get the best from each, you get the worst. And that's what these user groups usually do. We've got a few of them here in Las Vegas, and most of the time they're just complaining about how weak everything is now. You know, the programs are weak, we can't win, we can't do this. That's what winds up happening almost every time. Every time, as far as I'm concerned.
You don't learn from mistakes of groups. You learn by correcting your own mistakes. And I just say, nope.
Ideally, it sounds good, but it doesn't work that way.
Okay, there's some specific questions about the adjustments in entity with the two, the three, and all that, which we'll be happy to answer personally, but these are not the thrust of the crossfire. This is to Jim and to Tom. And it's a trick question, but I know you'll have a good answer. How far do you allow yourself to go back in the past performances to get a baseline?
There's no answer. I tried to answer that yesterday. There just isn't. I try to stay as current as I can, but sometimes you just can't do that. I mean, you just don't get the horse's true abilities. So you have to go back a little further. I can't answer. There's just no way to answer it. It becomes an intuitive thing. You begin after a while, after many successes and losses, you begin to look at it and say, this is what I'm going to use. This is that horse. And you do it, period. But there are no rights and wrongs on that. But the point I want to reemphasize is that you do have to concern yourself with the last race, though. Because that's the only test you have of the horse's current form. But you don't have to use that race, and I couldn't draw any guidelines for you how far back you can go. It doesn't work that way.
Total agreement. Last race is a good evaluation of what the horse is capable of doing. But which line that you're going to use, this is something that just hit or miss that you've got to work with till you're able to get it. The more you do it, the sooner you'll start recognizing. I look at all 10 lines, if a horse has 10 lines, see what he's really, really capable of doing. This is what you've got to do.
I'm sorry, could you?
Go ahead.
Okay. One last point. I made it yesterday. I want to make it again. Remember yesterday we were talking about the horse's performance at the stretch call? And several times we were choosing horses that were never, ever in a position to win a race at the stretch call. The same thing holds true about choosing pace lines. You have 10 available unless the horse is just lightly raced, right? Avoid choosing one of the 10 when all the others, all 9 of them, indicate a bad horse. That'll burn you worse than anything I can think of. Because it's 90 to 10 probability that that is the bad horse you've got here. And you've chosen a 10% limit. That's why you should look at all 10 races, just like Jim said. Beware of choosing a single baseline from all the past performances that is not indicative of what the horse normally does. And that's a concern I'd like you to walk away with here.
One other point. Let's say the last 3 races of a horse indicate that the horse is completely out of form. You know, why go back to the 4th line and pick up the best line that the horse has ever run to put him into your computer?
You know, so yesterday we ran 6 lines for one horse, and only 2 of them were negative, and the other 4 were just about the same. Well, we figured that's the kind of horse you can be relaxed with. But if you'd only had 1 good line, and we'd use that, it would have been a disaster. Now, Jimmy mentioned sometimes about mixing lines, using the last. We did that in the Yellow Manual once. We said if the horse dies on the this time, see what kind of a final fraction it ran when it ran it well. And Jimmy talked about taking a fraction from this race and a fraction from that race. And some people apparently got the idea that he does that when he puts them into the computer. He does that to max them up before putting in the computer, but he does not play around with the lines when he puts them into the computer. So this question, I think, is answered by that. This person wants to make sure that a need-to-lead horse can't go all the way. So should he add a few extra beaten lengths to him to make sure he can't go all the way? Yep. If you're going to play him into the computer. You know, this goes back to the other question, is that don't enter him into the computer. You know, look at this horse. Now, hey, this horse is an early horse. This horse is going to take the lead. If you have to put him into the computer, put the other horses in first.
Get your two horses, and then look at this horse in as a mixture of the others. Tom showed that time. He did that and entered other horses into the computer. After he had his regular contenders, then he would take a look at another horse. Now, I wouldn't change the pace line in an instance like this, add or take away lengths. In a particular instance like this, I made in my mind, as I said, on a track-to-track adjustment.
Ditto. The only time I ever tamper with that is that sometimes I'll shave the beaten lengths. If the horse ran at 7 furlongs, today's at 6, I might shave the beaten lengths between the 8th pole and the final. Just to shorten the race. But I do that, but I do it with my fingers crossed. But I don't change the time or don't add beaten lengths to try to compensate.
You've got to remember, these guys are professionals, and the reason they learn to take some of these little shortcuts are because they did it precisely as we told you to do it at first. If the horse is going 6 today, and his last race was 7 furlongs, the stretch call at 7 furlongs is 6 furlongs, and we've been known to shave the beaten lengths there. But until you get really secure with what you are told to do without taking these shortcuts, if you start this way, you're not going to end up as good as these guys. You're going to end up in left field. This is a long question, but it takes in the whole spectrum of horses. This person has obviously read a lot of books. He's new to our methodology. I know who he is. And he's read a lot of books about the speed duel. Many of the books say if there's a speed duel, two horses trying to lead a sustained horse will win. Another book says, in Quirin's book, that if there's a speed duel with two early lead, two early speed horses, that one of them will probably hold on to win. So that this whole thing, first part of this question is, how do you handle these front-running horses, and what's liable to evolve when there is a speed duel?
You know, in all honesty, there isn't as many speed duels as people really think. Where the duel and the really running starts is at the stretch. Now that's where the running starts. A lot of times these horses will say, hey, we're going to have a speed duel. They're going to speed duel in the first quarter very seldom because all these horses are vying for the lead. They're trying to get their position. They're trying to get their running style. They may push a horse and make him run faster in the first quarter in the second call. But you start watching, you'll see these speed duels happen at the stretch. This is why that this very good guideline that Tom gave you, a horse that's never there at the stretch, if something develops, you know, this horse is not going to be there today. It's horses that are up close. This is where the running starts. This is where they're trying to bring this horse in. They'll be vying for the lead at the first quarter. The horse that is the fastest will get the lead. This may stop him from going all the way. He may not be in contention at the stretch. But the other horses that are coming up will be the horses that are there. So don't try to anticipate speed duels. Get your horses from the first quarter to the stretch and then bring them home.
Yeah, a basic point is missing on some of those statistics. And the basic point is, just because there's a speed duel, you have, by far, the most successful method of separating these horses in the first place. Because you can analyze the pace right down to the nth degree. And most of these studies don't recognize or don't add to their data races that, for example, you have two horses that can go 44-1. That's suicidal if they both do it. But often, they go 44-4, head-to-head, right? And then they keep right on going. And now somebody says, well, see, a speed duel has no effect. The speed duel only has an effect if they go 44 flat or some other thing, and they're just out of gas. That's what really happens. So you get two horses match up, they go 44 flat, and they fall apart. The next race, the same two horses or two horses in a comparable matchup for you, they go 45, and they go all the way to the wire. One of them either makes it or they run 1-2. Now the data says 50% of the time speed duels don't have any effect. Wrong. 100% of the time it did. So you have the ability to separate these horses right here. If the track that you're playing generally goes 45, 110, and you have two horses that are going to go 44-1, probably they won't be around. But you have all of the tools to separate that. And if you put four front runners into a race, and one of them is markedly faster than the other three, there's no speed duel. Three of them just get thrown out, that's all. But you have the tools to separate all of those. I hope that answers the question.
Yeah. Another point is on this is, you know, one line doesn't tell what's going to happen in a race. One line doesn't do this. Look at other lines. You can see that, just like Tom said, horses that are going 44 and 4 may have a lot of energy left. You may have one of them that can do it in a 44-2 if you look back on him and see. So look at the total past performance of the horses.
Any of you who just thought of a question or something, you want to write it down and put it up here and write it here on the blank part of the table?
Yeah, we have till 6 o'clock.
Well, you guys are doing real good. Aren't you getting something out of this? You want them to stop?
No.
You want them to stop? Let's hear it. No. You want them to stop? Yes? No. Not too enthusiastic, and if you want a copy of Gary Owen's stuff, Gary would be more than flattered to give you anything, and probably more than you're even going to ask for. Now, here's one that I think certainly deserves an answer of some degree of harshness. Is any work being done or is planned to produce an estimated win probability for contenders as a function of the different computer programs? I thought that when we introduced these programs, we made it absolutely clear that you should use the program that you believe in the most, the one that attracts you the most, the one that you feel the most comfortable with. Get to love it, get to believe in it, and use it for its... I'm not going to tout one program over the other. You're the one that has to make the decision at the window. And each of these programs will do its job depending on how well you do your job. The more complex programs will do the job if you don't do yours. The less complex programs will do just exactly what you allow them to do. Do you have any comments on programs? This is an old conflict. I hate to see it.
I do have a question. I'll answer that. It's a point I made yesterday. First of all, they all work. And for us to say that this program is 70% probable, this is 50% probable, this is 40% probable, does not, that kind of probability doesn't recognize the wide divergence in skills between all, amongst all of you. The winning percentage is yours, not the program's. Some of you will take a program and just make it sing. Others, by not paying attention to the fundamentals, when it sings, you don't want to hear the music. And I mean, it varies amongst the group. The winning percentage is yours, and it's not the program's.
I'm glad they answered that question, because, you know, I'd have to say Furumation. Somebody's got to be honest, don't they? But listen, the people who are enamored of this phase one thing, who suddenly opened their eyes to pace, they believe strongly in it. And it certainly is a fast way of getting contenders if you have no idea how to get contenders. I would not phase one as a contender getter ever, because you sure see a horse that can't finish the race and a horse that runs too fast early right off the bat if you use that. And it's free. It's in the book. It's a chart. You don't even have to buy the program. Okay, this is an answer that I'm going to give, and I'm not even going to ask them, because they probably, we got to remember, they're pros, and they don't have to, Jimmy does. Jimmy deals with your questions. Tom's answers phones from 6 o'clock to 6:05 Wednesday, second Wednesday of every week. He's a pro that has to make his living doing this. He can't do it. And we have told you, in Energy, KGN, and Thoroughmation, not to use more than 9 beating lengths. Yesterday, Jimmy entered the races for the Breeders' Cup for his own particular reason, but 14 lengths, because they were longer races, and he got a better perspective from his point of view. But remember, he's a pro. Now, if you want a rule, do not use ever more than 9 beaten lengths on a horse. Not because it's going to make the horse look better to only use 9. It'll make it look worse. It'll look and make better if you put in 14 lengths at the first and 8 at the second. It'll make him look better than he is, because it utilizes a deceleration form. So the answer to that question is, in advanced programs, no matter what these guys say,
don't put in more than 9 beaten lengths.
I didn't even know the answer to that. I didn't know I wasn't supposed to do that. Did you?
This is based on research from your records, and that's the answer. That's the name of that tune there.
You don't get a chance. You want to?
I don't want to comment.
Nope.
Hey, listen, Tom Ding, Tom Campbell.
I am.
Hey, good for him. Okay. This is a good one. And the answer is no. In the tandem manual, we gave you two tandem procedures. One was to take another race other than the tandem race and see how the horse did when he was not in the tandem. The other was to use the same beaten lengths as the best horse in the tandem. Apparently, people have heard Jimmy and me say that you shouldn't do that in using energy or coronation because there are internal factors in there that reverse the tandem automatically. I would say don't change the beaten lengths when using the tandem horse in the advanced programs. Jimmy, you want to add to that?
Don't change the tandem beaten lengths. Put them in like they are.
Well, I don't use... This is like everybody in here. You're going to pick and choose certain things that you like and you're comfortable with. And this is just one I never used, so I'm just not qualified to comment on it.
Okay, this goes back to what you've already answered, but needs a clarification. Once again, in the book, in the Phase 1 book, and in the Yellow Menu, we have a track class chart. And with in the basic Phase 3 thing, how much one track should be disqualified from another, disclaimed, or discounted. And the person is not clear on the answers they got, which is that they don't use these personally in their handicapping. There is a way to do it in Phase 1. And we don't use it. That question's been answered from this perspective. So they say, why is it in the Phase 1 book? I suggest then you get with, personally, Dick Schmidt or Michael Perry, who wrote that program to utilize class track, and ask them personally how they would use it. My procedure in that is that I've done very well in experimenting with Phase 1 back when it was in 1975 and with the new computer version of it. It's put zero there, and I get the winners just as readily, but there will be some conflict there, and I think that these gentlemen who have worked so hard to demonstrate the validity of perhaps making an adjustment there should be the ones who answer it, since these gentlemen have answered it from their perspective. That's Michael Perry, and you know Dick Schmidt, you can't miss him. Michael, would you raise your hand? So any of you who are not clear on this, talk to Michael and or Dick Schmidt after the session. Okay.
I'd like to make a comment on that. You know, you take Oaklawn Park. Oaklawn Park in some of the manuals is listed as a high-class track. Oaklawn Park is not a high-class track. Oaklawn Park has inflated purses. These purses are inflated. They have bad horses. They have Remington horses. They have Louisiana Downs. They have Fairground horses. The purses are inflated. You start making adjustments for tracks based on purse structure. You open in a can of worms that he'll never win. Now that's just my opinion on it.
Am I missing something? I wasn't aware they were adjusting for track class. You were just adjusting for track to track differences, Mike.
No, it's both class and the speed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,